Progress toward the strangers, all males, judging by their height and build. But it was impossible to be sure, as all eight wore amazing, intricate masks. They were built on a thin wooden frame, covered in huge, nodding feathers of turquoise, green, and coppery blue. The faces were stylized, with eyes of white shell, teeth of jade, and cheeks made from a black stone that Ryan guessed was probably obsidian. The effect was impressive. The men wore long cloaks down to their bare feet, fringed with the same feathers. The cloaks looked to be woven from linen and were a range of colors. Black predominated, with red, yellow, and green. Only one man wore an emerald cloak, and he was the tallest, walking at the center of the half circle. His mask was even more ornate than the others, and he carried a long sword at his hip, made from the same black stone. Mildred's brow furrowed, as though she were struggling to remember something.
Green means royalty, I think, and yellow is connected with food. Black was either priests or nobles. I can't recall which. Red might be warriors, the color of blood, you know.
The man in green held up his hand, flourishing the black sword.
Kolapwawatskin. Et samambawako. Eschebelyash.
Teyaho huwawewe.
The native with the wounded arm replied at length, gesturing toward Ryan and the others, miming them opening fire, and then acting out the deaths of the slavers. Finally, he pointed at Jack, though he didn't look at the young man. He touched his clenched fist to his chest, then to his forehead, and finally to his lips, in what was undoubtedly some kind of religious ritual.
Play this cool, Jack.
Sure.
The sword dipped, and every man and woman and child dropped to their knees.
The man who would be king. I'm certain our guesses are correct. They regard the lad as some kind of long-lost god or monarch, or perchance a combination of both.
Only the green-clad man remained standing, his face invisible behind the feathered mask.
You are come to us. The wait has been long. If you had come a day sooner, the men with whips and chains would have been scattered, and we would not be in mourning.
We scattered some for you this afternoon.
We heard this, and we thank you. Thanks to the servants of the Awaited One.
Friends, not servants.
My name is Itzacoatl. In your way of speaking, it means the Serpent of the Black Stone. The brother who you helped is called Chimalpopoca, Smoking Crest. We are the people called in our tongue Masehuali.
Aztec names. Mother of God, but these are lost descendants of the ancient Aztecs.
How do you come to speak our own language? Are there other Americans near here?
Americans?
Are there any?
No, we have not seen Americans for more moons than there are fingers on the hands of many warriors. Not in the memory of any person of the tribe.
But there were Americans here?
Itzcoatl considered the question, his face invisible. The smoke from the many fires billowed around him, making him look like a creature from ancient myths rather than a human being.
There is a temple, right word? Temple some miles from here with a door that is never opened.
The gateway.
That is part of many places where Americans built in the years before the crops failed. Our fathers, fathers, fathers worked for them, helped them in their preparation for war. When they departed, it was a sad day for all of the people. The dead they left, we buried in honor. Some took their own lives. None stayed alive. We learned their way of speaking, and because we thought that they would return, we have kept up learning of their speech. I think I speak it more good than other men. But it becomes harder with each child. One day, it will be lost.
What is the other language you speak? I don't know it.
We call it Nahuatl, the old tongue we know from the far-off old days.
I'm sure that's a word from the Aztecs.
Guacoma, Eschel, Sot, Yumka'a.
One of the men dressed in a black robe leaned toward the leader of the tribe and said something. Itzcoatl nodded.
Quatlatoa, who is called Speaking Eagle, reminds me that we are poor, what is the word, someone who receives strangers.
Hosts?
Yes. You bring us the Weighted One and save the lives of our brothers and sister. And we remain beyond the walls, breathing out empty air and words. You will all stay and eat with us now?
Thanks. Just a couple days, perhaps. Then we'll have to be on our way.
There was something in the man's remarks that upset the Masawali people. The plumed masks gathered close, and all the body language showed tension and anxiety. The leader held up his left hand. His right hand dropped to the jewel-studded hilt of the polished black stone sword on his hip, which produced silence.
We fear you leaving soon. We cannot repay the debt if you leave quickly, so stay as long as you want.
Thanks again. Be glad to stay a while.
Good. Good.
Two men moved forward and took the arms of the prisoner, with surprising gentleness, and led him away.
You'll chill him?
He will be used.
Throughout all the exchange, it had been glaringly obvious that the real subject of interest was Jack Lauren. Every eye in the crowd was glued to him, following his every movement.
You will be shown to your huts. Will two be enough for your needs?
Sure, that'll be fine.
The meal being cooked now is not good enough for... not good enough for any of you. Go to your huts and rest, and women will bring water for washing. Then, later, we can feast.
The leader turned and walked back in a stately manner, followed by what seemed to be his inner council, through the tall gates, the crowd of natives parting like the Red Sea. They all moved back even farther as Ryan led his friends into the village. As Jack strolled through the gates, the entire gathering fell again to its knees in salute.
Phew! Never been a guide before. I could get used to this.
Ryan called everyone together in the hut that he had picked for himself, Christy and Dean. It stood next door to the building offered to the others. The structure was made from thick logs and sealed with clay. The roof was layered palm leaves, the floor packed earth. There was no door, just a curtain of wooden beads. The 15-foot square room was divided into what appeared to be cooking and living sleeping quarters. A small fire burned in the center of the cooking area, most of the smoke finding its way to the roof, out through a hole in the thatch. Silent women had brought in pots of cold, clean water and bowls for washing, keeping their dark eyes averted from the group of outlanders.
Take care about drinking too much of it. Not sure about their hygiene here, or the way they dispose of their waste products.
They seem healthy.
Sure they do, John. They've had 50 generations to get used to whatever toxins might be present in it.
All right, listen up. This is a new situation on me. The way I see it, we're safe here at the moment. Our stock's high with these natives. Partly for the help we gave, and even more for the fact that they seem to think that Jack here is just a short step away from Christ himself. Only thing is, these aren't like any people we've ever met in Deathlands. There's no way of knowing how they'll react to any given set of events. Don't let the blasters out of your sight. Don't go anywhere on your own. And that applies to you, Jack, even more than the rest of us. All right? Nobody here knows how gods get treated.
Okay. Maybe I can sort of be the god's best friend.
I'll let you be in my dream, Dean, just as long as I can be in your dream.
The meal was held out of doors in front of the main building of the village, which was a longhouse where the official business of the place was enacted. Its coatl, deprived of his mask, had told them that. He was revealed to be one of the tallest men in the village, with gold rings through his ears, so heavy that they had pulled down the lobes, almost to his broad shoulders. Across his chest, he had a tattoo of twin serpents, entwined, open-mouthed. Each held a human skull in its gaping jaws. He still wore a green robe, decorated with the same beautiful feathers as the masks. When Ryan and the others came out of their huts, summoned to the meal, the chief was standing at one end of the table, beckoning for Jack to take the seat at the very head.
The place of most honor.
He seated the others on either side, staggering them with the senior men of the village, including Chimalpopoca and Quatlatoa. The food reminded Ryan of meals that he'd had close to the Grandee, in the south of old Texas, and in the very northern regions of old Mexico. There were plates of corn tortillas and bowls of red beans and chili to go with a large cauldron of fish stew. Maize bread was piled all along the table for everyone to help themselves. The drink was an herbal-flavored liquor that Ryan's neighbor told him was called Oktli. Vaguely reminiscent of pulque,